It's a football fans podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Bailey and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen. And on the Pieces of Eight podcast, I was making reference to the plethora of podcasts that have exploded on the Celtic football fan scene and how they seem to have an episode every 2 minutes. So guess what I did today? I managed to find the time at lunchtime to do a bit of a podcast in conjunction with those multiple podcasts, and we're going to have two out in a week. Hey, if you can't beat them, join them. Anyway, enough of me. The Celtic are changing their approach, I think, to fans media, and first step in that was that 10 of us or 11 of us had an opportunity to speak today to David Trimble and interim manager John Kennedy. So here is the chat from that day. My Zoom crashed just after I asked the question that I wasn't expecting to ask first up with David Turnbull. So there's a wee bit missed out, but the bulk of it's John Kennedy, who was very fulsome in his answer. So fortunately the John Kennedy part lasts quite a long time. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Bailey, with David Turnbull, John Kennedy and a plethora of podcasts from Celtic football fans. How's the atmosphere in the camp this week with the changes in management?
Yeah, it's been great. Everybody's kind of looking forward to the game at the weekend. Off the back of a good result last week, and then obviously a kind of strange week for everybody with what happened, but the atmosphere's great, and as I said, we're all kind of looking forward.
Keith McGinty.
Hi, David. You've had a rare full week of training, and John had mentioned in his previous press conferences that since taking over, you'd like to see the quality of chance creation. Does that mean less shots from distance and an emphasis on creating chances with a higher XG?
What's XG?
Expected goals, so chances from inside the penalty box would have the best chance of scoring. So maybe the 30-yarders have got maybe 1 in 20 chance of going in, but trying to create chances for like Eddie or any of the other strikers maybe more in the box, especially if we've got defences pinned back a bit more.
Yeah, we always work on kind of ways how we try and score and create chances for the forward players. I feel we create a lot of chances.
If there's a learning curve this season, what would you say has been the biggest outcome?
Just kind of don't get too high with the highs and don't get too low with the lows, I'd say, maybe. Also, there's been a few strange results and tough results this season for the team. And it's just about putting them right and kind of once we've gone a wee run, we kind of need to keep that going, I think, and not just do it kind of once now and then. Probably that, yeah.
Thank you.
Paul John Dykes.
Good afternoon, David. Paul John Dykes from a Celtic State of Mind here. And I was just looking at Scott Brown. He soon turns 36. How big an influence has Scott been on you since you joined Celtic? And how important will he be in influencing any new rebuild at Celtic Park?
Yeah, he's been brilliant since the day I've come in. Even when I wasn't playing, he was kind of involving me in everything and just kind of having banter with me and stuff. He's been great to have around on the pitch and off it. And what is the rebuild, you said? I'm sure he'd say he's probably still got plenty left in his legs, so it's kind of down to him. That's not really for me to say.
David Falls.
Hi, David. It's David Falls here from the Celtic Star. Just wanted to know, David, if the players are aware of the significance and the importance of the support in winning our next two games so that the Rangers don't win their first ever title at Celtic Park next Sunday.
Yeah, we've gone to each game focused on kind of getting the win. I said before, we take it game by game, and we just want to win every one, and kind of we'll focus on Dundee United at the weekend, we'll get the result there hopefully, and then takes us to the game following Sunday and hopefully do the business there.
Hi David, Paul from Celtic Fans TV. With the Scottish Cup looking like it's going to go ahead, how determined are the boys to try and maybe make some wrongs and end the season by winning a trophy?
Yeah, it's good. It gives us a few more games as well, kind of through the strange season. After the kind of next game, it'll be good to after the last Betfred game. Sorry, it'll be kind of good to go put that right, and we'll try put on a run together and get all the way in the final and get as far as we can. I hope we can do that.
The Celtic Exchange.
Hi David, Tino from the Celtic Exchange here. David, with just 7 league games left and the league looking like it's likely all but over, how hard is it to motivate yourself, especially being a young player and the guys around you?
I wouldn't say it's hard to motivate yourself. Playing at a big club like this, it's every game. You should be motivated for it anyway. There's also a kind of bigger gap than we'd have liked. But we've gone to every game wanting to win, and personal pride as well, we can play for that, and we just go out there and kind of try play with freedom.
Brian Gilmore, coming back to you, have you got a question?
No question, more questions for David.
And final question to Jamie.
How are you doing, David? It's Jamie from 20 Minute Tim's podcast here. I was just wondering, is there any players when you were either coming through or playing today that you try and model your game on?
Can you say that again, sorry?
I said, is there any players either when you were coming through or playing today that you try and model your game on that you admire?
I'd say when I was younger, kind of watched a lot of football and every kind of different country. I'd always say kind of the boys like Lampard in the Premier League and maybe Iniesta at Barcelona. I loved watching them and just try to take wee things to their games. Lampard kind of scored a lot of goals and created a lot of chances. That's what I like to do, and just want to continue to try to do that, and probably they too, yeah.
Cool, thanks.
Cheers, thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, David. Thanks.
Thank you, David.
Thanks.
Cheers, Steve.
Hi, John. It's Joe McHugh, Video Celts.
Joe, how are it?
Not bad. Can you bring us up to date with Vasilis Barkas? He was on the bench for a few games, missed out at Ross County and Aberdeen. Is he injured? Is there other issues? What's the situation at the minute?
He was injured. He had an ongoing ankle issue, which we had to kind of pull him out and try and address and, you know, give him some treatment in that. He's come in for the last kind of day and a half. He's trained the last day and a half, did some of the session yesterday. He trained today, so he's back fit now. And again, it's been a little bit like, you know, himself this season. He's had setbacks along the way at different times, and that's led to a kind of lack of consistency in his training and his work and getting up to speed and developing the way we want. So we just need to kind of to settle that down. And hopefully now we can, you know, get a bit of work in him and be consistent with that.
Is there any sort of time scaling when he should be available for first team selection?
Again, we'll address the weekend in terms of how he's feeling and how he's come through the training. And then we'll just take it from there. So we'll just need to see how he progresses.
Okay, I'll pass the baton on.
Keith McGinty, hi.
Hi, John. It's Keith McGinty from thecynic.co. Best wishes from everyone at the Cynic for the remainder of the season to you. You've mentioned that you're a student of the game. Can you tell us a bit about your own footballing philosophy, who you draw inspiration from, and how you would like to see your team play?
Yeah, I think it's one where I think growing up for football, you kind of play football, you enjoy it, you love it. And then when you kind of take the step across, you kind of the mindset changes. It probably changes before you finish, actually, especially with me, knowing that I wasn't going to be, you know, playing until I was 35. So the kind of mind changes in terms of how you look at the game rather than just playing it and, you know, doing your job. You look at things more collectively. And then from there, it's just a case of what you want to be and what you want to do. Ultimately, as soon as I knew football playing-wise was going to be cut short, I didn't want to come away from it. I just loved it too much. You know, spent most of my life being part of me. So it was pretty much, you know, getting involved in the coaching side. But again, ultimately, you can't always, you know, in everybody's case, jump straight into that. So I wanted to be more well-rounded in terms of, so I took a job scouting and recruitment, which gave me a great insight into what went on behind the scenes, how players were brought in. I did the opposition analysis, you know, again, so looking at oppositions, how they set up, you know, in terms of winning against whoever they might be playing, but then breaking it down in terms of when they come to play a team like Celtic or a bigger teams, do they change? And just the trying to address that side of the game and how you read it and seen it. And then ultimately moved into coaching when I got the first opportunity. You know, I was coaching with some of the academy kids in the evenings as well as working as a kind of analyst and scout. And then the under-18s job came for me. And I think that's when it really starts for you as a coach because, you know, like most of you guys, you'll look at games, you'll analyse them, you watch, you know, football from everywhere, which we all do and love to do. But I think when you get really into the nitty-gritty of the coaching, you get a real feel for what you are and how you see football properly. You have ideas. Those ideas, sometimes when you go and carry them out with the personnel you have or the teams, you have to be adaptable and change and think about things. But ultimately, having been watching Celtic all my life, been involved at Celtic, you know, as much as I was a defender, I'm a very attacking-minded guy. You know, it's very much about the performance and how you can dominate, how you can, you know, play attacking football and score as many goals as possible. But also it has to be a collective in terms of how you defend and how you work together. So everything's got to be in conjunction with each other. And I think through my experience as a coach, I think you get to know what you're comfortable with. You know, if you're a guy who, you know, you watch football and you say, yeah, I want to build out for the back, and you set your team up and all of a sudden you're jumping out your seat every pass, it might be tight, then it's not real. You know, it's not real for you because that's not what you really believe in, because your emotion comes out at that point. And if you've got the fear, trust me, your players will have the fear. So it's, you have to be comfortable in what you deliver. Be really true to it and not try and be false. So for me, it's very much been comfortable with the ball, you know, in terms of an attacking intent, being in control as much as you possibly can. Whether a team presses you or not, you've got to identify how you attack, where you attack, and the times you have to speed and slow the game down. And you need to do that with full control. So everybody needs to be involved in that. It's not a case of, you know, you pass the ball and your forwards and you let them go and do their magic. The minute our defenders go from maybe having the ball and working in a different area, and all of a sudden the attack accelerates very quickly because of space and time, we go, our defenders have to move at the same speed as everyone else. So if the ball breaks down, we're still fully connected. We're all on the same page. And then again, the transition type of side of the game, then if you're open and spread, you'll get done every time. So it's very much you get to know your beliefs and your coaching style as you do it. And you have ideas, you have things you like to watch and see. But I don't think it really truly comes out to you work on the pitch and work with teams. And within that, you know, even a long time I've worked a certain way with my youth teams and my reserve teams, played in a very specific style. You know, and being comfortable with that and enjoyed that. And then when you come into first team, you know, being part of coaching groups and management teams who, you know, you have to be adaptable in terms of you always have your key principles. You know, your style doesn't change, you know, but tactically you've got to be adaptable in terms of, one, what's available to you, what personnel you have, what the opposition are going to bring, and what might be working for you in that period of time. You know, but ultimately you've got a big picture of how you want it to look. And that style, you know, they always refer to, what's your tactics? It depends. It depends what the situation is at any given time. You know, your style is the most important thing. The players have to understand your key principles. And tactically, it can be as minor as a 5-yard movement, you know, in terms of if a team press you a specific way, the number of players you need to build the play, and then the number of team players you might need in a specific area. And it might mean a winger moving from outside the pitch, moving inside the pitch 10 yards to overload a certain situation. That's resolving a situation. That's a tactic, you know, and I think sometimes it can be a bit misunderstood. So, again, what we need to do is create good decision makers, and that's the way I like to work in terms of training and coaching. We have a very much, you know, a setup and a structure and parameters within that. But players have to be good decision makers. You know, we can't stand as coaches on the side of the pitch and make every decision for them. You know, so in terms of them recognising situations, you know, and it might be key triggers, and that's what when training comes in. You've got to work them and put them in, you know, situations that force them to make decisions, force them to make mistakes. But again, if they can't correct that, you've got to correct it for them and give them the options. So that's the way we get trained. Train good players, you've got to train the good decision makers, and always have that structure and key principles to play. And ultimately, we all want it to look good, you know, me more than anyone else. I want it to be slick. I want to dominate the ball. I want to score as many goals as possible. And that's Celtic for me in a nutshell. But we've got to get results for that as well.
Thank you.
Hi, Craig Finn. Craig, nice to see you.
Hi, John. Craig from CelticHere.com here. I'm just looking to find out a bit more about James Forrest and his injury. I know he was due back the end of February, but Neil Lennon said before he went that it was his complications and he's been back training on his own and he's not training with the first team. Is that something you're looking to get back onto the first team training field in the next couple of weeks?
He's actually trained this week. So a bit of insight there. So he's come through the week really well. So he's trained every session this week, got through it. He's looked good, to be fair, as the week's progressed. He's, you know, become more and more of himself, what we know. And I'll probably sit with James tomorrow morning just to address where he's at. You know, I want him to be part of the squad as quickly as possible, but he needs to be comfortable with that. You know, in terms of he's been out a long time, and I know what it's like when you come through surgery and rehab and everything else. The coach might think you look good, but you might not have full confidence and might not think you've done enough. Looking at him, I would like him to be part of the squad, but ultimately I want James to be comfortable with that as well. So we'll sort that over the next day or so. But we've missed James, you know, and that's one player who, you know, again, talking about that attacking intent and everything else, and having a structure. But when you've got players who have 1v1 mobility, who have, you know, James's numbers the last couple of seasons have been terrific in terms of his goals and assists and everything else. You know, so regardless of what the opposition do, if we can have the adaptability to have players in the squad who can, you know, break a structure just from pure 1v1 ability, you know, that's massive for us. Especially at Celtic, when you expect, you know, teams to come and defend a lot, you expect to have a lot of the ball. You know, having that, you know, nice patterns and ways to break down opposition is great, you know, but at times it's a case of maybe pulling them one side, isolating your 1v1 players on the other side or in a certain area of the pitch and allowing their actual quality to come through and create situations out of nothing. So it's good to have that. We've missed that through James, Mikey Johnson being another one, you know, who's not been fit. And I think that's showed in the performances at times this season and reflected in the results as well. So it's good to have him back. Hopefully he feels good about himself and, you know, the sooner we can get him back involved, the better.
Yes. David Folds.
Hi, John. David Folds here from the Celtic Star. Just wanted to ask you if you could give us some thoughts on the three managers that you've worked with that helped Celtic win the second nine in a row for the club, and just what contrast between the styles of the three of them, what they were like to work for and what the lessons that you've got from them that can help you in the job at the moment.
Yeah, I'll start back with Ronnie. So obviously came in, I'd been taking the reserves at the time. And I think at that time there was probably, what lacked at the club was probably someone who could, one, identify and knew the club, knew the players, knew the staff. And having come through the academy, both as a player and as a coach myself, it was, you know, how can we, you know, pull these talents up? How can we get them around the first team as much as possible? And I'm one who's very much about that, you know, in terms of, you know, I want to, you know, give them that opportunity. I was given the opportunity at a young age. You know, several of the players I played with who went on to play here were given that opportunity. You know, so opportunity is massive at the right time, you know, for the right players and the ones who show, you know, they're capable of that. So that was, you know, part of the planning behind that, you know, coming up with Ronnie, who I got on very well with, and also had a keen eye in terms of, like, pulling through the best young players to be part of it. So again, with Ronnie, Ronnie was very clear on how he's very good coach. You know, Ronnie was a good coach on the pitch, loved to be involved in the training, you know, was very clear. When he first came in, he was very clear that we want to play 4-3-3 and blah, blah, blah. You know, ultimately the squad probably at the time didn't always quite fit that because we had a couple of number 10s and stuff. So again, being adaptable, you have to adapt to that. you know, but you know, very motivated, good energy about him, you know, good coach. I thought the second half of his first season, we started to really show his style, you know, in terms of very aggressive and pressing, you know, a lot of counter-attacking in terms of winning the balls in really positive situations, you know, and bringing the clarity to go and attack and defend together. So there was certainly a lot, I think, you know, and I felt it in my experience at Celtic that, you know, getting that second season when you don't qualify for the Champions League, there's always, you know, a cloud comes over for a period, and it's how quickly you can come out of that. And if you don't come out of it quickly, it can drag on a bit. You know, there's certainly a knock-on effect. So I think that was noticeable in that second season. Confidence dipped a bit and things just didn't quite work out. But, you know, terrific guy, very honest guy, good coach. You know, and it's great to see that he's been running and working in New York now as well. So after that, we had, obviously, Brendan, who I think speaks for itself in terms of his CV and what he is. You know, excellent, not only as a coach, but as a person. Really got everybody's interests at heart, makes everybody feel very much part of it. And you felt that from early on in terms of coming in. You know, it was very much he arrived and Brendan Rodgers had arrived in this big name, you know, but certainly, you know, in the training ground, around the club, it wasn't about him. It was about, you know, creating a real togetherness and a culture he's there to help everyone. So for me personally, getting to see someone of that calibre working was terrific. You know, got very close with him. You know, worked very close together. You know, in terms of his decision making, you know, he was always very clear. And that's one thing really with Brendan. He has an unbelievable confidence, you know, in terms of how he conducts himself and the way he makes decisions. But an amazing talent of getting everyone on the same page, an amazing talent of getting the best out of people. And that's, again, away from coaching is great, you know, but when you're kind of a coach and a manager and everything else, psychologically is a huge part of it as well, you know, because players have to, especially nowadays, need to feel that, you know, they're there to help them, you're there for their good. And when you do that, Brendan had a great knack of like hooking people and getting them on board and part of the process. So great guy in terms of his in-game management, very decisive. You know, I've been involved in him, and you might be in the back foot a little bit. You know, automatically you think, like, how do we try and block this up a bit more? Or some, he would do sometimes just go get a striker on, bang, as quickly as that. Very decisive, very clear on what he wanted, you know, and terrific manager to work with. So again, I still speak to him a lot. I have a really great relationship with him. But again, very honest, very open. But probably one of the best. And then also Neil, again, I knew Neil from a player. I was a reserve coach when he was a manager first time around. You know, and Neil's biggest real skill was his one motivation. He made it very clear to the players in terms of the being part of Celtic. You know, he was very good at telling the story of the Celtic story, and this is what it means to play for the club, and really driving that motivation. And being very clear in that and the expectation and the standards. And Neil was a serial winner, you know, in terms of, I know it's been a tough season this week, but, you know, he would do anything to win. He would be, you know, he would do long hours in here in terms of that drive in game, you know, ultimately wanted good performances, but, you know, he knew what winning meant to Celtic, you know, and you got to continually win here to be successful. And I know, having spoke to him over the past week and even over the time this season, you know, it happened really hard in terms of not getting the results, not getting the performances, you know, and just the way things went. You know, it hit him harder than anybody else, trust me. So, great guy, you know, great respect for him, you know, excellent motivator, excellent, you know, very direct in terms of how he wants the teams to play, you know, with a very high tempo and being aggressive in the play. You know, but ultimately, you know, when things don't work out at a club like this, then, you know, things happen. So he decided to step away from that, and, you know, we respect that fully as well.
Okay. Brian, you're in, Brian?
Yeah. Hi, John. Brian Gilmore.
Hi, Brian.
You mentioned to Keith there earlier about to play the way that you want to play, you need good decision makers on the pitch. So is that a long-term thing within a club? Is that a long-term culture that needs to be built within a club from youth right the way through the system? And do you need to have somebody in the modern world with managers changing regularly? Do you need to have somebody who sets that culture within the organisation?
Yeah, it should be. It should very much be, and I hope that is part of, you know, having and knowing all the coaches in the academy level here as well. And that's, you know, it's not about the coaches, right? This is one thing is, yeah, I'm a coach and I want to work and I want to set things up and do things a certain way, but you have to do what's right for the players, all right? And, you know, I've seen it before. I've seen very good coaches work. I've seen other coaches who work differently, you know, say differently, but they spend half the time talking in riddles and explaining things to a level where probably the players don't get it. So it's about being very clear on what you want, making the players understand, you know, the expectations and that key principles, you know, in terms of these are the main things, how we want things to be. And you have to work them and train them in a way that forces them to make decisions under pressure as best you can. You know, that might be from as simple as playing when to play one touch, when to play two touch, when to dribble, when not to dribble, when to make your runs, timing of your runs, or it might be more tactical when it's involved. Like, okay, if the opposition are doing a certain thing, these are the spaces that will become open and that's when you arrive into them or whatever it might be. So that takes time, 100%. And that's the way we've always worked anyway. At times this year, I would certainly say that we've probably made, you know, more bad decisions than we should be. That comes with pressure as well. But from a young age, you know, it's very much at the early stages. It's about, you know, developing the skill set and being comfortable with the ball and everything else. But naturally, you'll start to make decisions. You know, when you're a kid and you're playing in the garden with your brother, you know, you decide whether you're going to have a shot then or whether you're going to try and nutmeg them. That's a decision. And through that process with young players, it's a kind of guided discovery. You can't constantly tell them what to do. You know, even a player like James Forrest or Mikey Johnson, no matter how good a coach or manager you are, if you don't give him an element of freedom to make decisions when to dribble or when to beat someone or a particular skill, they can do things that we can't coach. They can do things that, so there has to be a kind of framework there. There has to be an organisation within that, but there has to be a level of expression for the player to showcase what they've got. You know, and that's up to us as well to try and build that and give them that freedom within the structure. But they got to be able to express themselves and do what makes them good as well. And ultimately, that makes the team good. So very much in training, you know, we work in a way that we'll have a specific, you know, thing we want to work on. It may be a possession drill. It may be more of a tactical drill or a directional game of some sort. But without having to explain everything all the time, you know, the players want touches of the ball. They want to be active as much as possible. For coaches, it can be as simple as conditioning a drill that forces them to make the decisions you hope they make. You know, so I'll use an example. We might position gates in a certain part of a pitch that forces them to play diagonally across the pitch, because ultimately that's, you know, the way we want to build the ball is playing through teams. If teams want to man mark you, then you've got to play at angles all the time and play away from the centre sometimes. So your position gates in a certain thing. Now, I don't need to explain that so much to them and say, by the way, this is why straight away. Naturally, it should happen. And then explain, by the way, this is what you were doing and this is why. If they continually make bad decisions, then you've got to correct that and give them the options. But if you continually tell them what to do non-stop, then they become robotic. And if that situation changes in the game, what are they going to do? You know, oh, you told me that was going to happen. Yeah, but it didn't. Would you want me to wait to half time till we try and correct it? I'll try and get information on the pitch. But the more good decisions the players can make and be comfortable with that, and that comes from coaching. That's not just putting in the players. That comes from situations and training. You know, it might be reflecting on games. It might be approaching games, showing them things, speaking to them, you know, running through drills, exercises, and just encourage more good decisions. And from there, it's not about battering them and telling them that was poor. It's about, right, this is what you could have done better, and trying to educate them on that.
Cheers.
Okay. Hi, Paul. Paul John Dykes, Paul.
Good afternoon, John. Paul John Dykes from a Celtic State of Mind here. Conor Hazard has recently signed a new deal at the club. How important will the development of Celtic's graduates be as we move into a post-COVID Brexit football landscape?
Yeah, it's important, always is. Even now with the way the landscape is with Brexit, COVID, everything else, then you know, we've got to maximise what we have in-house as well. You know, Connor's one who, you know, you'll have seen yourself several times this season, who's one who's been around the first team for long enough now. And to be honest, he earned his opportunity to play through his training and how he was progressing. And as I say, opportunity is good for young players to show themselves. Now, there's areas of Connor's game when he did well, and he'll be the first to admit there's areas of the game, you know, especially in certain games where he has to be better. You know, and for a young player, especially a goalkeeper where, you know, making a mistake's very much highlighted, it's dealing with not just the talent he's got, but it's pressure situations. So how do you deal with a setback? You know, looking at Connor's game, very talented player, goalkeeper who, you know, we hope has a very bright future here. For him, again, psychologically, okay, you make a bad decision, you make a mistake, what next? Things I've seen with Connor is very much that it hangs over him for too long. One decision can become too, as minor as it might be. So again, it's how you address that and just resetting. Knowing you made a mistake, accept that, acknowledge it, but again, reflecting on, okay, what makes a good performance for me and get back on that. So for Connor, he's a good player, one we have high hopes for. You know, delighted he's committed for the next couple of years and hopefully continue to progress the way we want him to.
Thank you.
Thank you. We've got Paul from Celtic Fans TV. Paul?
Hi, John. Paul from Celtic Fans TV. How much have you and the players benefited from having a full training week together, and what improvements are you looking for from last week's performance against Aberdeen?
Yeah, it's been good. Just having that contact time as a group's been good. Again, last week was a difficult week for the players, you know, from an emotional point of view when there's change and the manager leaves. It takes a lot of energy out of you. I thought that showed in the second half at times in the game. I thought we just lacked a wee bit of energy second half and lost our way. Whereas the first half, I thought we started really, you know, really bright, pressed well, with good intensity. We, you know, built the ball well and created promising situations. So that was really happy with that first half, you know, in terms of building blocks and a solid foundation, creating enough. And then you want to then encourage that second half and even more. And just through experiences of the season, I think the fact it stayed 1-0 when we, you know, first half if we get a second goal, I think you'd have seen a totally different team in terms of the confidence, you kind of blossoming and coming out really out of their shells. With the second half, I just thought the experience of the season, we've been in those situations, you know, there seems to be a sucker punch. You know, we concede a set play, we concede a penalty, we lose a goal and we draw the game. You know, and I think subconsciously, I think that got to the back of their heads a little bit. We stopped getting into position quick enough. Stop moving the ball with limited touches, especially when Aberdeen man marking aggressive. You've got to be quick with the ball. You've got to create your own space at times. You've got to play, you know, with two and three and four people to try and disorganise them. And we stopped doing it. You know, we certainly stopped doing that. So again, we addressed that at the beginning of the week. Showed them the comparison of when we do things well, what the outcomes are. And then when we stopped making, you know, small movements, small angles for each other, you know, making the passes with limited touches, it just invites the pressure and it gives Aberdeen, you know, confidence to come on here. So there's a number of things we take for the game very positively. I'm very much a guy who will, as much as possible, take the negatives and address them. And I will be, you know, really reinforcing as many positives as possible, because ultimately it's understanding what makes us good. You know, what makes us good. If we do that more often than not, it'll breed success. It'll bring good results. It'll bring good performances. These are the issues. This is how we fix them. We'll go out and work on them. So, you know, so basically, we have to score more goals. We need to get back to scoring more goals. We're creating enough, even half chances, that, you know, those half chances, even, you know, if we have five of them, we've got to start converting them, because that's sometimes what can change the game. You know, I thought our build-up was cleaner. In the game, especially first half against Aberdeen, which gives us a solid foundation where everybody is getting an idea of where they should be and then how and when to kind of move the ball up the pitch quicker. And then when we do that, we're all connected, we know when it's going to happen. So we should know, you know, if it goes to plan, which it doesn't always do, but when it does, we should know what's happening before the opposition get a chance to adapt to that. So things like that we worked on this week. You know, we worked on our own game first and foremost, which is the most important thing. And then we address some things around what we expect from Dundee United. So, you know, I'd like to be much more ruthless in the final third. You know, and that's not about, you know, peppering the goal with shots from 25 yards. It's about creating bigger chances. And when the big chances come along, be ruthless, make good decisions, go back to that. You know, does it need to be a first-time finish? Do you need to shift and get your shot off quick? Or do you need to be more patient and circulate the ball a bit more to stretch their defence and open up gaps? So we did a bit of that. Reinforcing, and there's been a lot of, in recent weeks, looking at us in terms of our structure in the diamonds being good defensively. You know, give us good control of the pitch. And again, it's fine-tuning that in terms of collectively they got to defend. You know, whether you're a striker or you're a right-back or a centre-back, you've got to defend. So one, they'll be pressing from the front, be aggressive. If that gets beaten and the ball moves to their full-back area, what do the strikers do to stay part of the team? So there's just little bits like that which we'll constantly reinforce, constantly trying to build on. But ultimately, you know, when you get good performances and you get good results, you get more confidence. You know, so even the decision making in the game, when you're more confident, is quicker. You know, you have more belief in it. You have more belief in yourself. And it's building that trust and togetherness and that cohesion that, you know, everybody feels comfortable that they've got support around them all the time. But we've got to be aggressive. You know, it's nice. I enjoy playing for the back. I enjoy having the ball. Very much dominating games. But we've got to be really aggressive when we defend in the right moments at us. One, because it might take, you know, them pressing and running the ball in a good situation. And it's very small mini counter-attack. That can be, you know, very successful for us scoring goals as well. I think period last season, I remember speaking to one other manager in terms of our play, you know, and we were very dominant, you know, in terms of when Brendan left and Neil came in, the changes we made, it was about trying to increase the tempo probably, playing more combination play around the final third, being a bit more forceful at times. So there's a balance between being patient and just passing for passing or asking questions of the opposition. So we want to ask more questions. So we tried to be quicker in a play come the final third, get more players involved. So, you know, you can play 2-on-2. Pretty much you can evenly match it up. You bring a third player into the equation, it just becomes more complex to defend. So again, bringing a third player into that. So we did all that. And I remember the managers, to get to my point here, I remember one of the managers saying, like, everybody talks about you know, dominating game and your possession and everything else, but my God, they use ruthless on counter-attacks. And that's what we want to be, you know. So if you have to counter-attack, you know, and you have to use the counter-attack to get a goal and score, win a game, we've got to be ruthless at that as well. So we've got to be adaptable, we've got to be flexible and be able to be as good in many areas of the game as possible. You know, but we need to have that aggression in a play at the right moments.
Thank you.
Thank you. Homeboys next, Joe.
Hey, John. Joe McKenna from the Homeboys podcast here. Hey, a different question here. Since the move to Lennoxtown, it seems, appears over the years, we've come to a point where players have very little interaction with fans apart from a match day. And added into this, very few players play an active role in attending supporters club functions up and down the country. And that's enabled somewhat of a disenchantment of fans. Have the club or anybody at the club realised this? And is there any kind of idea to heal that, perhaps maybe by making it contractually obligation that you have to make some kind of personal appearances at a grassroots function, something like Everton would do?
Yeah, I don't know the ins and outs of it. I know since moving here, it was very much about getting, you know, a training ground and a quieter environment where you could like have a bit of privacy, probably more than else. You know, I've been at Barrowfield when you're setting up a drill and the kids have jumped the fence and stolen 5-year balls. And you're chasing them through the scheme, but and I think the training ground, the modern world, you know, all the clubs want to have a training facility. I think a lot of them will be in more private locations. So I think that, you know, I was a player at Celtic Park, and on a daily basis, you would come across fans outside the stadium, and it very much you felt, you know, close to that. There is probably a little bit of detachment, but it's probably for the focus of, you know, having a working environment up here and having that privacy. And then beyond that, the supporters things and everything else, I'm not entirely sure in terms of, you know, what the club commit to and what they don't. It's probably something that it has to be about and, you know, in discussing. If there are issues, then I know people at the club will happily look at that and speak about that. But, you know, that this is the thing about Celtic, and I've been here a long time. I've been a fan when I was a young guy growing up, and everybody needs to be together. You know, and that's what makes us special. That's what makes us strong. It's been difficult this season. One, because of the way the seasons went, performances, results. But on top of that, not having that interaction you know, with the with even the game. So it's been sad, really missed, not just by us, but all clubs across the country. But I think specifically us, just because turning up at Celtic Park is very much about the kind of being there and the event as much as the game. You know, it's the families coming together, the fans coming together, the singing, the interaction, seeing the play, the team, you know, performing and winning games and scoring goals and the elation of that, the big nights, you know, and we've massively missed that, hugely. And I think that's caused a bit of kind of then, you could call it maybe a little bit of a divide, you know, in terms of because of, you know, upset on the outside compared to what the players are thinking, but we're still working and we're still trying to do things right. And, you know, you get a bit of stick for that. That's part of the course. But, you know, it's been a difficult year, not just in society, but if you break it any like the football side of things, it's been difficult in that player to fan interaction, which has been so strong in the past. You know, club to fan interaction has been so strong. I think the challenges it's gave us this year has, you know, brought us a lot of problems with that. But, you know, certainly something going forward. I know the club, you know, it's about the fans. You know, it's just always about the fans in terms of doing the right thing, giving them a product they can be proud of, one they can go on and cheer every week. And we never want to lose that, you know, especially me. I've grown up a Celtic fan. I know what it feels like. And this year has certainly felt different in that respect. One, because of the season, the way it's went, that always brings a bit of difficulty and attention. But, you know, that missing the fact that people have been locked up in their houses and not able to attend games even, you know, that interaction brings something special, and we've not been able to get that.
Thank you, John.
Okay, thanks,
John.
Anthony?
Daniel. It's actually Daniel for the fourth time. How are you doing, John?
Hi, Daniel.
I just wanted to ask John, with the news that the Scottish Cup will be played out to finish this season, on a personal level, John, how good would it be for you to win a trophy as a Celtic manager?
Hi, Daniel. Again, it's good for the club, good for the team. It's a trophy we've been very successful in recent seasons, you know, and also currently are the champions of that. So it's great the fact that we can get the opportunity to play that out, you know, and try and win some silverware. Again, we've become so accustomed to winning. And when you don't win, you know, it hits you very hard. So that's been the case this year. So, you know, the fact that we know that they're going to play the cup, you know, gives us an incentive, a bit of extra motivation. And something to really, really attack. Again, in my own position, I'm generally just approaching each week as it comes, each game as it comes, and doing what I think is the right thing to help the team, help the club, and the club will obviously decide what happens, you know, as time goes on. But certainly for the team's perspective, speaking on their behalf, you know, having, you know, an extra bit of silverware to go after. And it's always nice. Scottish Cup final is always a good one. That end of season feel, you know, it can really set you up for the next season as well if you can be successful in that, because you finish on a high, you finish with that confidence. You know, you came into pre-season training 4 weeks later, the last game you played, you know, was a cup one. You know, so already the confidence levels are a good level. So that's what we would like to finish off with. So we just got to attack that with everything we've got.
Cheers, John.
Thanks.
Jamie?
Thanks very much. Hi, John. How are you getting on? It's Jamie. Hi, from Jim. 20 Minute Tims here. I just want to say good luck for the rest of the season before I go on with my question. I don't think there's any doubt that, and it's something that Neil Lennon addressed, that set pieces have been a real issue this season. And listen to you talk earlier on, you spoke a lot about training drills and also the personal responsibility of the players. What do you think the key issue has been with set pieces this season, and where do you think the responsibility lies during the 90 minutes? Is it more with what you do in the training pitch, or is it more about players taking responsibility on the day?
It's collective. Everything's collective. I would never, you know, isolate one person or one small group, because ultimately everything we do, we prepare them. We allow that decision-making factor, but we always have that organisation. You know, so, you know, I've been here in the past, you go zonal defend, you can see the goal, it's because you're zonal. You know, that old argument. So I've seen it all the time. So people will find fault in anything. Now, set plays we've had an issue with this year. I think it's a number of things. Sometimes it's been lapses in concentration. It's been a number of different things. But we work on it, you know, in terms of every week we spend time. We've tweaked things. We've put an extra zonal player in at times. You know, sometimes when Shane Duffy played, we actually gave him the responsibility of being centre of the 6-yard line. You attack everything that comes and we'll have everyone else marked up. We'll have the front area space covered up. I've been here in the past when we went zonal defending, conceded. But this year, I think, and again, this goes back to squad profile and everything else, we've not got an overly aggressive, you know, defensive team in that respect. So we don't have a lot of players who naturally, you know, their greatest strengths are, you know, me being physical with you and dominating you. You know, we've got very good footballers. We've got one or two who can very much handle that side of the game. The rest are good. Sometimes you come up against, especially teams like Aberdeen, for talking sake, you know, they're a big, aggressive side. So at that point, it becomes, you know, about one organisation. Yeah, we'll always have that and we'll know what the plan is. And then from there, it's about, you know, in terms of what you have, it's been, you know, doing that job to the best of your ability. You know, I could go out and mark someone and be man marking them and do the best I possibly can. He might just be better than me in a certain situation. Yeah, it might be too dominant, it might be too big, whatever it might be. So again, we got to come up with solutions for that. You know, it's not an excuse. We got to kind of keep finding ways. We've done a lot of work in the last couple of weeks. As simple as, you know, putting them in 1v1 situations in the box, putting them in 2v2 situations in the box, you know, putting crosses in there and working on organisation's good, but you've got to be clear in executing that as well. So it's fine, I tell you to mark someone, but how are you doing that? What's the best way of doing that? You know, depending on what your skill set is. So if I'm playing against Ash Taylor last week, for talking sake, yeah, he's 4 inches bigger than me. Right, I can't let him get a run on me. You know, so I got to be physical before the ball gets moving. Because the minute the ball gets moving and he's had one or two steps, he's jumping top of me and have no chance. So one, it's how you mark, how aggressive you need to be. If we know there's blocks and stuff coming, you can try and adapt to that. And we have different ways of dealing with that in terms of if a team crowd four around a penalty spot for a corner kick and they go basically touching each other, it's impossible to mark them. It's impossible. So at that point, it's a case of, right, okay, we'll get four players and we'll zonally spread out and we've got to be aggressive matching the first, second, third and fourth run. So a lot of little things like that, which we try and address and give them solutions. And then from there, it's a case of, right, the execution of it. And ultimately, this season, we've not been good enough in that. You know, we can look at the organisation of it. There's bits we could do better. And at the same time, collectively, we all just got to find the answers for that moving forward and learn from it.
Very much.
Okay, thanks, Jimmy. I think finally, Martin, Celtic Exchange.
Hi, John. Tino from the Celtic Exchange here. John, I'd asked a similar question to David Turnbull just regarding the remaining 7 league games of the season. So, unfortunately, looks like the league's all but done. How hard is it for you to continue to motivate the players? And also, how important do you feel in general that the, you know, the mindset as in the modern game?
Motivation, it can be a number of things. Obviously, in terms of motivating them to go and win the league is difficult because of the situation we're in and the difference in points with Rangers. So you have to find a different motivation. And that's, you know, the coaching part. And for me, going out in the pitch and that is simple. You know, it's easy enough. It's then finding, one, how you motivate a team, and how you bring them together, and within that individual, how do you motivate individuals? And I always find that if you can find development within players, you know, so players realising what they can do better and giving them a clear kind of guidance and how we're going to do that, and they feel you're there to support them and help them and make them better, then that's, you know, a very subtle way of motivating. So having that belief in you that you're doing things right for them. And then collectively, for us as a club, it's like understanding and accepting what we've underachieved this year on the pitch, but not giving up and not falling down to that and allowing our performances and results to dwindle away for the rest of the season. You know, you can only affect what the next step is and what you're doing there. It's about representing Celtic in the right way, performing the way we expect to perform, and it, a product of that, then if you do that, becomes good results. You know, so it's very much about building going forward. What's happened's happened. We've got to deal with that, accept that, but make sure that we're very clear in expectations of the players. And that goes down to attitude, commitment, the way we train, the way we work, what's expected on the pitch, and from the staff. and just trying to improve that, get back to the improvement mindset, get back to being developers, and then from that we'll bring greater confidence, better results, better performances, hopefully.
Thanks, John.
Thanks very much.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Hope you enjoyed that. We will be having the game podcasts coming up, so if you've got that game that was very special that you want us to talk about, email podcasts@celticunderground.net and we'll pull something together, maybe have some new guests on talking about their memories of a specific game. So email us at podcasts@celticunderground.net. This is me, Harry Beattie, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring